And as Jamie McDougall said just before that piece, we'll be returning live to continue our coverage of the Edinburgh International Festival tomorrow at 11. That's here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock, time now for the latest BBC news from Vaughan Savage.
Thousands of athletes, officials and spectators from London 2012 have begun their journeys home through a temporary Olympic terminal at Heathrow Airport. Initial figures show just over 26 million people watched the Games' closing ceremony on the BBC last night, slightly fewer than the peak of 27 million who tuned in for the opening event. A Belarusian woman has become the first athlete at London 2012 to be stripped of their medal after failing a doping test. The International Olympic Committee has confirmed that the gold medalist, Nadzeya Astapchuk, tested positive for an anabolic agent. 11 other competitors were sent home during the Games after failing tests. It's emerged that the body of 12-year-old Tia Sharp was found in the attic of her grandmother's house. It had been wrapped in a black bedsheet in a black bag. Police have apologised for failing to find Tia's body until Friday evening, despite visiting the property several times. Earlier, the man accused of murdering Tia was remanded in custody by magistrates in South London. Stuart Hazel, who shares a house with Tia's grandmother in New Addington near Croydon, appeared in court via video link. The Pope's former butler is to stand trial for stealing confidential documents. Paolo Gabrielli, who took the papers from the pontiff's office, said he acted because he saw evil and corruption everywhere in the church. A lay member of Vatican staff is to stand trial accused of helping Mr. Gabrielli. An official inquiry in Norway into the mass killings last year by Anders Behring Breivik has said the bomb attack in Oslo could have been prevented if security measures had been implemented properly. The inquiry also found that Breivik could have been arrested earlier once the shootings on the island of Utøya had begun. Councils in England and Wales say heavy rain and flooding earlier this year has caused damage which will cost tens of millions of pounds to repair. The local government association says funds may have to be diverted from other areas. The weather. There will be scattered showers and spells of rain for most of the UK, which will be heaviest in the west. There is a risk of thunderstorms in Wales, western England and Northern Ireland. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. Now it's time for Proms Chamber Music, live from Cadogan Hall in London. It's presented by Clemency Burton Hill.
Hello and welcome to Cadogan Hall for today's Chamber Prom, a real highlight of the season today, featuring the superb young British violinist Nicola Benedetti, former BBC Young Musician of the Year and a Proms featured artist this season. Now, we do have a glorious programme in store this lunchtime, beginning with one of the most monumental works in the violin repertoire, the Chaconne from Bach's Partita No. 2 in D minor. Bach's transcendent work seems somehow a blueprint for everything that might be possible in the human condition and beyond. Indeed, it's often described in such devotional and reverent terms as a triumph of spirit over matter. Well, resisting linguistic description, I think today we should let the music speak for itself. Nicola has agreed to have a quick chat with me after she's performed the Bach, after which she'll be joined by pianist Alexei Grinyuk to perform two songs from one of Erich Korngold's most popular works, the opera Die Tote Stadt, Marietta's Song and Piero's Dance Song. Nicola and Alexei will then be joined by another old friend of theirs, Leonard Elschenbroich, to perform Brahms' impassioned piano trio number 3 in C minor, a work that they came to relatively recently as a trio, and which Alexei told me earlier is quite unlike any other work in the chamber repertoire. Well, before we hear the Brahms and the Korngold, let's welcome to the stage violinist Nicola Benedetti to perform the Chaconne from J.S. Bach's Partita number 2 in D minor. Thank you.
Thank you.
from Johann Sebastian Bach's Partita No. 2 in D minor, performed by violinist Nicola Benedetti, who's joining me on stage after that monumental performance. Nicola, thank you so much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
For a violinist, it sort of starts and ends with the Bach Chaconne, really, doesn't it? I mean, there's so much else besides, but it's such an extraordinary piece. How has your relationship changed with it over the years?
Yeah, it's definitely a piece everyone remembers the first time they heard, and the first time you open the pages to that movement, and keep flicking through the pages. It lasts a long time. You can't quite believe that that is just the last movement of a five-movement work. I heard it first time at Yehudi Menuhin School by a colleague of mine, and it is absolutely extraordinary. And I think the very first performance you give of this piece, you feel like a different person after it, and probably slightly different for every other performance you either give or hear from then on.
It's also a real feat of athleticism.
Yes.
And quite terrifying to be up here on your own on stage, especially to kick off a concert.
I'm glad you're saying that after I played, not before.
You didn't look terrifying. You made it look horribly easy. In fact, earlier you said that you thought you could probably play this in your sleep because you've practiced it so many hours. And of course, you are also a wonderful role model for many, many young children around the country in terms of being very dedicated and practicing hard. But you'll be joined by two of your colleagues later on in the programme. So quite less scary. There'll be three of you up on stage shortly.
Yes.
Tell me what it's like to play with Alexei and Leonard.
Oh, it's great fun. I mean, you witnessed some of our rehearsal this morning. And this morning was serious in comparison to normal. Both of them are just wonderful, wonderful people. I've known them for years. I've known Leonard since I was 10 years old. We went to school together. We're the best of friends, all three of us. And it's an honour. I mean, it really is an honour every day to play with such incredible musicians. They teach me so much every time we rehearse, every time I hear both of them. It's just a lesson and a joy.
I was chatting to the boys earlier to get the lowdown on your rehearsal process, and they were saying, interestingly, they both approach a work like the Brahms Piano Trio, which we're going to hear, in very different ways. One of them likes to sort of think about the big picture, and the other zooms in on the details. Are you somewhere in the middle of that?
No, they understand that about themselves, because I've said that about them so many times. That's been my analysis of both of them.
I think Leonard did say rather sheepishly, actually, it was Nicky that pointed that out.
Yeah, that's true. I would say I'm probably the quietest of the three in rehearsals. I probably say the least, but I just kind of, they both like to talk and debate things a lot, and I'll sort of sit back and form, of course, the best idea in the end of all. I'm joking, no.
Well, you may be happy to hear that they did say that you were basically their leader down to the trio.
I think they were just lying, actually.
It's a wonderful, wonderful work, the Brahms Trio.
Yes, it is.
As a violinist, what does it mean to you?
Oh, I mean, Brahms is who he is. He's such a unique character in the context of composers that are as celebrated and as great as he is. I think the warmth and the kindness, I'm probably saying very stereotypical things, but it's really the most important character of Brahms. In saying that, we're going to start the first movement and you're going to hear no warmth and kindness for at least the beginning of the exposition. As soon as Leonard and I begin the second subject, it's a absolutely glorious melody that we play in octaves together, and then Alexei takes it over, and it is again just one of the, I mean, just an open heart. I don't think any other composer has ever managed to emulate that or to do it like him.
Talking about glorious melodies, next we're going to hear some Korngold. I know he's one of your favourite composers. You're playing his violin concerto as well this season.
Yes.
Why are you so drawn to his music?
Well, Korngold violin concerto has definitely shot up in popularity recently, and he seems to be a much more celebrated composer and much more programmed composer. I've recorded just very recently his violin concerto, and also these two arias that we're going to play now. I think they're fantastic works. I think he gives a great insight into a composer that managed to do a whole lot of different sorts of compositions, from composing for film to opera to great concert works. I'm a big fan of his music.
We're very much looking forward to hearing it. Just very quickly, though, a word on your fiddle. It's quite special, isn't it?
Yes, this is a 1717 Gariel Stradivarius.
I'm slightly terrified to hold the microphone over it, just in case.
Sorry.
I sort of do that.
I'll hold it over here.
I mean, I am sort of shaking in its midst because it's so beautiful. What's it like to play?
Oh, it's an absolute honour. I'm so grateful. This violin's on loan to me from Jonathan Moulds, who owns various instruments and very kindly has allowed me to play this for the last... Well, I've only played this violin about 6 months, actually. I was playing another violin of his previously. But this violin, Yeah, it's my baby. I love it.
Don't want to give it back. Well, we'll let you take a little momentary breather and change bows, I believe,
yes.
And then we'll be hearing the
Queen
Gold.
Thank
Nicola
you
Benedetti,
very much.
Thank you so much. Well, as Nicola Benedetti mentioned there, we're going to hear two arias from the young Viennese prodigy Erich Korngold's most popular work, the opera Die Tote Stadt, composed in 1920 when he was really at the height of his popularity. And so to perform Marietta's song and Piero's dance song, please welcome to the stage violinist Nicola Benedetti and pianist Alexei Grunyuk. Marietta's song and Piero's dance song from Erich Korngold's Die Tote Stadt, performed here at Cadogan Hall by violinist Nicola Benedetti and pianist Alexei Grignyuk. Well, they've been performing together for over 4 years, and you can certainly hear that friendship in the music. We'll be hearing from them both again in a moment when they'll be joined by another great companion of theirs, cellist Leonard Elschenbroich, to perform Brahms's Piano Trio No. 3 in C minor. Now, Clara Schumann said of that work that no other piece of Brahms had ever so completely overwhelmed her. She described it as deeply touching, and that's interesting because when I was talking to Leonard Elschenbroich a bit earlier, it's also the word that he used to describe it. He said that what was touching was that it's the voice of an old and rather broken man, and the anger and anxiety that comes with age, and yet at the same time there's a sort of grandfatherly kindness in there, especially in the slow movement that Nicola mentioned earlier. A statement, he said, of an old man, not a young, turmoiled romantic, but one who's aged a bit. And he said that's quite rare because you don't normally hear those outspoken Sturm und Drang romantics actually get much older. Less ebullient than Brahms' early works, the trio's taut and very concise. Pianist Alexei said it's very inspired, but it's like a big symphony. It's full of all the things that Brahms has in his symphonic repertoire, but made very concise and very tight. Well, to perform Brahms' Piano Trio No. 3 in C minor, please welcome back to the stage violinist Nicola Benedetti, cellist Leonard Elschenbroich, and pianist Alexei Grignyuk.
Thank you. great friend and colleague Robert Schumann. Also a late work, also the third trio, the slow movement, the second movement of Schumann's third piano trio.
violinist Nicola Benedetti, cellist Leonard Elschenbroich, and pianist Alexei Grinyuk performing as an encore the second movement of Schumann's third piano trio in G minor. Absolutely ravishing that was. And before that, we heard Brahms's piano trio number 3 in C minor. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back here at Cadogan Hall again next Monday lunchtime.
And thanks to Clemency Burton-Hill. This is BBC Radio 3, and now at 12 minutes past 2, another chance to hear The Prom from the 3rd of August. The presenter in the hall was Martin Handley.
Hello and welcome to the Royal Albert Hall for the first of the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra's four proms in this 2012 season. They've arrived to perform music that's always been close to BBC SSO's chief conductor Ronald Runnicle's heart.
I think it was very much to do with growing up where I did in Edinburgh, which was up in the Pentland Hills. And at this time in my life, I'm talking about when I was 15, when I was 16, the world of Richard Wagner was introduced to me through school and through a visit to Scottish Opera. And the music filled my head all the time. It was this love affair, like falling in love with the first time. You just cannot get it out of your head. And I have to say that I embarked with that on a journey which I continue now.
Well, later he'll be tackling the vast canvas of Bruckner's last completed symphony, his 8th, into which Viennese critics of the day complained he'd imported his hero Wagner's dramatic style. True or not, the 8th is still a magnificent achievement, and if it's Bruckner's largest scale work, then Wagner's Siegfried Idyll has to be his smallest. It began life at Christmas 1870 on the resonance staircase of his villa by the shores of Lake Lucerne. That was when Cosima Wagner, newly married to Richard, received a pretty special 33rd birthday present, the first performance by 13 musicians of her husband Siegfried Idyll. Not only was that the name of their young son, but Wagner was working on Act 3 of his music drama Siegfried at the time, and much of the material he uses in the Idyll appears in that act, particularly themes through which the hero, Siegfried, is glorified, and he and Brunhilde exchange expressions of undying love. In the opera, these are heroic, full-blown moments, but in the Idyll, Wagner toned everything down for this musical love letter to the woman who transformed his life and brought him a measure of stability and peace. The size of the original band was dictated primarily by the staircase of the Wagner home. Wagner later used more strings, as we'll hear tonight, though the beginning of the performance has solo players, as originally by the shores of Lake Lucerne. That applause for the guest leader of the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, David Adams. And he's followed onto the platform here in the Royal Albert Hall by Donald Runnicle to conduct Wagner's Siegfried Idyll.